In the 2 years after the East Africa bombings, the idea of cascading threat gained currency in national security circles. It was feared that as embassies and military installations were hardened, with more guards on alert and better perimeter controls, Al-Qaeda would inevitably search for softer, less well-fortified targets, such as housing complexes, schools, and cultural centers. However, when the next attack came, its target was not an embassy, but an even more imposing symbol of American power. On October 12, 2000, a small boat packed with explosives motored up alongside the USS Cole, which was anchored in the harbor of Aden. The blast killed 17 sailors and tore a 40-foot hole in the $1 billion destroyer, very nearly sinking it. The bomber's audacity was breathtaking. The use of a shaped charge, a bomb fabricated so that its explosive force burst primarily in one direction, demonstrated a new level of technological skill and resourcefulness. The attack on the Cole demonstrated just how lightly the U.S. military had been taking the threat of terrorist violence. The NSC memo sent to the Pentagon in 1997 and leaked to the Washington Post had warned specifically of the dangers surrounding American ships in port. The Navy disregarded these admonitions and the known threat conditions in Yemen, which was second only to Afghanistan on the list of states infested with terrorists. Admiral Vern Clark, the Chief of Naval Operations, conceded after the Navy's investigation of the incident that the commanding officer of Cole did not have the specific intelligence, focused training, appropriate equipment, or on-scene security support to effectively prevent or deter such a determined, pre-planned assault on his ship. In the words of Vice Admiral C.W. Moore, Jr., the commander of naval forces in the Middle East, the Cole's captain, Commander Kirk Lippold, failed to deliberately plan, deliberately implement, and actively supervise a force protection plan. Moore added, "The watch was not briefed on the plan or their responsibilities. The bridge was not manned, service boats were not closely controlled, and there was little thought as to how to respond to unauthorized craft being alongside." The Navy possessed virtually the entire body of intelligence on Al-Qaeda and disregarded it so thoroughly that an institution built on the concept of the personal responsibility of the commander decided that no individual should be punished for the security lapses. Equally culpable was the regional commander-in-chief, Anthony Zinni, who approved the decision to refuel in Yemen. A more telling display of the persistent disbelief concerning the threat from Al-Qaeda would be hard to imagine. Responding to the attack on the Cole posed another challenge for the Clinton administration. Clearly, jihadists were behind the bombing, including probably Al-Qaeda. But no claim of responsibility arrived from any known group, and there was no intelligence tying the attack to the leadership in Afghanistan. To launch a military strike against targets in Afghanistan on the basis of nothing more than a strong intuition would have gone well beyond any U.S. military precedent. No information indicating authorship of the attack materialized during the remainder of the administration. The clock was running out on the Clinton administration, and the United States was in the midst of its closest presidential race in a century. Any military action would have constrained the next president's room for maneuver and committed him to a policy he had not chosen. In 8 years, the Clinton White House had never forgotten the unfinished business it inherited from the first Bush administration. In the former Yugoslavia, where Bosnian Muslims were being slaughtered in the worst European violence since the Holocaust, in Somalia, where the Bush administration initiated a humanitarian operation and committed U.S. troops to serve under the aegis of the UN just before leaving office. And in Iraq, where Saddam Hussein continued to build weapons of mass destruction after a war that was supposed to end his rule in Baghdad. Bosnia and Somalia provided the two greatest foreign policy traumas of Clinton's first term. And whether the next president was a Democrat or a Republican, no one thought it was right to encumber him with unfinished military business in Afghanistan. The FBI's investigation in Yemen went forward with John O'Neill in charge, and intelligence collection continued. It was left for the succeeding foreign policy team to decide on an appropriate next move.